Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with veteran actor Jeff Plunkett, who is here starring in the production of The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey at Florida Studio Theater. In this show, I'm playing a part of an interview I did with Jeff a long time ago. And in that part, he talks about how he became who he is and how he developed his career. In the second part of this interview, Jeff talks at length about the piece, The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey. It's a brilliant play, it's a brilliant performance, and in this interview, you can hear what went into making this extraordinary experience. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Is about being the person you really are. Not the person you think you should be. Not the person you wish you were. Not the person other people tell you or told you you should be. Not even the person you currently think you are, but the person you really are. As I said in the run-up, the interview I'm airing today is with Jeff Plunkett, and in it, we will talk about his performances as he plays 9 characters impeccably in this play. One of the interesting things about this play for me is that it speaks to exactly what The Lynn Show is trying to say, and that is that it is possible to be the very person you are without guile, without denial, without pretense, to really be you, without second-guessing, without wondering if this or that behavior is okay or appropriate or will be approved of. The play talks about the experience that this boy has, Leonard Pelkey, in being what he is, which is not exactly what everyone else is. Leonard is very far from typical, and his atypicalness causes all kinds of different responses. But Leonard is never dissuaded from holding on to his very personal identity. As I said in the run-up, in the first part of the show today, I'm rerunning part of an interview I did with Jeff several years ago, in which he talks about his personal life, how he became the person and the actor that he is. And in the second part, he talks about his experience of doing this play, which is remarkable. But no less remarkable than the experience that we each in the audience had. So here now is my original interview with Jeff. Okay, so I'm here with Jeff Plunkett. Okay, so I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Yes.
And as an actor, I'm making the psychic leap that that's what you do. Is that correct?
I do, yes.
Okay, good. And I only ask one question.
Please.
How did it happen? How did it start? Not what was your first job, but what was the first moment in your life that it occurred to you that acting, stories, entertaining, maybe making people pay attention or laugh, any that became a part of your consciousness?
I became very young. I remember in second grade we were reading a story, and then there was a textbook had a play in it, and we just started reading that aloud, and there was just a certain joy I felt in trying to make these words on the page sound spontaneous. Next time.
Really? So second grade, seven?
Seven, I guess.
Eight?
Yeah.
Something like that? Seven. This is an interesting thing to say. That you spontaneously decided to make the words more interesting, more than just read them. Was that a direction from the teacher?
Love for language. My parents kind of instilled that in me.
How did they do that?
Just encouraging reading. You know, I lived in a small town growing up and went to the library all the time. And there was a small grammar school, some small student-teacher ratio.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I had good guidance and attention. And that love of literature then...
Stories.
Stories kind of developed into a storytelling love as well. And, you know, as you know, there's a very distinct difference between a novel and a play. A play is rather like the score of a symphony. You can certainly read the notes, but it's not only until performance takes place that the life...
It's just laying there.
Just laying there, exactly.
Yeah. So at seven, you have a clear memory of seeing these words and thinking, well, I can do something with this.
Absolutely. I made the distinction very young that there was a difference between literature and playwriting.
That there was a difference between just reading the thing and then somehow becoming it or acting it, or
absolutely.
Is that what you mean?
Absolutely.
Right, okay. So here you are at seven in the second grade, and I'm assuming everybody is reading off this thing. Was it read aloud?
It was read aloud.
Mm-hmm. And,
it's very informal.
Yeah,
really,
no.
It wasn't a seminal moment in my life. It just...
Oh, I think you're wrong, actually.
In retrospect, it was. But happening, it certainly made, you know, had no great impact on me whatsoever, except that I just remember a distinct enjoyment of it.
Yeah, see, I think that is what makes it seminal, actually. I mean, you can ask, I don't know, everybody on the street what they remember about when they were seven, and most of them will not have any memories from the time they were seven.
It's traumatic. I broke my arm.
Did you? Oh, you mean what happened?
That's my first memory, though.
Is your broken arm?
What their first memory is. Usually something traumatic.
Traumatic, of course. Okay, so at that moment when you're reading, did anyone comment on it? Or were you aware that you were doing something different than other people were doing?
My teacher just said, you seem to have a taking towards this. So she was very encouraging.
Yeah, right. This was really a big deal, actually. I think this was very important.
You know what?
You know, not only that you found it inside of yourself, but immediately you got re-encouragement.
Absolutely.
For it. That's great. Okay, good. So
here's to our teachers, by the way.
Here's to our good teachers, right? Teachers. Absolutely. So, and the other thing I want to say about that is, what she did was really nice. She complimented you on it. No, that's not even right. She commented on the fact that it seemed to have meaning for you.
Exactly.
And she didn't put anybody else down by that.
Exactly.
Right. And it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Good for you, whoever you are.
Mrs. West.
Mrs. West. So, okay, so what is the next thing that happens that leads you in this path?
So I also enjoyed singing quite a bit. And I, my mother will deny this to this day. She really doesn't anymore. But when I was little with her, she would sing around the house. And she was rich, alto, dense, loud voice. Mm-hmm. And I recall it was, I think the musical Hair was in like the top 10 on radio shows. And she loved those songs. I remember she was pregnant with my little brother, Chris. And we would.
And how old were you?
So I was 5 or 6. And so she'd be singing around the house, and I enjoyed that. And so I quickly enjoyed singing. So that was a lot about actors. Their kind of career begins with singing. And I have a blessing and a curse. I had chronic ear infections growing up, which I still am grappling with to this day. And because I was singing so much, my parents took me to a pediatrician who happened to know a woman who not only gave voice lessons, but ran this rather esteemed opera company on the New Jersey shore. And so at a young age, I think I started when I was 13, I started studying with her.
Wow.
So we thought that perhaps learning how to sing correctly might
help your ears.
Strain my voice, my ears. So it was really...
Wow. Talk about...
A dark moment came in. Bright light, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was singing small roles with her opera company then, at a young age, studying with her through high school then.
Okay, so you're already on stage.
Already on stage.
Yeah, you're already performing. You're already thinking of yourself
right.
as a performer.
I was. But she was very pragmatic, and she insisted, actually, that I study something else when she sent me off to college. This is my voice teacher. And so I did.
What did you study?
I studied psychology and biology, and I was on a pre-med track in undergraduate school.
Wow.
And I went to a small undergraduate school, which afforded me the opportunity to almost pick and choose the roles I wanted to play.
Because there
was a small, there wasn't even, when I was there, now it's a booming and growing theater department, but there wasn't even a theater department. It was just this wing
teacher?
Of the English department that put on 4 productions a year. And I was graced. They were wonderful years. We had a woman who's still there whose sets, I've yet to work on more beautiful sets. And this director who was legendary, who worked with Eric Bentley, who had done Bertolt Brecht's adaptation. So I just had this incredible cadre of talented support while I was pursuing something completely different. So my focus was split in college, and that was fine. I often tell young students that I think a good, broad-based liberal arts education is really important to any artist, just because you have so much more to draw on. You're exposed to science, and literature, and philosophy, and religion.
I think that's right. You completed college, you got a degree in either psychology or biology, right? And did you have a minor in drama?
No,
you never even did that?
Like that was not even possible. I perhaps would have nowadays, but that was not even...
Okay, so you graduate, you've got a BA or something?
Yes, and I at that point I knew I probably didn't want to go to med school. And it was funny because I had even taken summer physics classes and things just to catch up.
You're a good boy.
Good boy. And, but in my senior year, I had an audition for a lot of really premier graduate programs in acting. And right down the road from, I went to Bucknell University for undergraduate, and right down the road was Penn State University, which had an enormous theater program. And they had offered me a graduate fellowship, and it was the day after graduation that I called them and said, is that offer still on the table? And they said yes. So.
And you said yes?
I said yes. Mm-hmm. These were heady days of graduate school, too. Ooh. There was seemed to be a lot of money, and there were stipends, and...
Yeah, there was money around.
There was money around.
Yeah, right.
So
you, you were lucky.
So it was... I lived in the nicest apartment I've ever lived in. I had a car. And those were heady days in graduate school. And so that was 3 years of conservatory training.
Well, did your family notice that you weren't going to be a doctor,
yeah,
you were going to be an actor?
Completely supportive. I'm very fortunate that way. Not all families are. And I think every parent knows how, you know, fraught with difficulty this career path is. And if they don't, they're kidding themselves, because it is. I mean, you know, 99% of actors aren't working at any given time in the union.
Right.
Not even
the ones
that aren't union. So, but I appreciate it. They, you know, when in the balance of life, you know, happiness over financial success, they seem to prefer happiness.
For you.
For me, which I was, I'm very fortunate, and I'm continue to be grateful to them for that. And let me just mention, they are across the state right now, and they summer, or they winter in Port St. Lucie. And I think my parents have missed maybe two shows I've been in my entire career. So.
Wow.
I imagine they'll be tracking their way over.
I'm sure that's right.
Lucky.
Yeah, you are definitely lucky. There's no question about it. You've had support in every place that you were.
Isn't that something?
Yes, it is something.
It is something.
I mean, you didn't get, what are you thinking, who do you think you are, what
absolutely.
Are you crazy, any of that, which is what most people who are going to try and make a living, certainly as an actor, my God,
right.
you know, get. So so you had a pretty easy ride, and then, you know, Penn State says, open arms, here, come and let us give you money and take care of you and
yeah.
study here, right? Okay. So you'll have these 3 years of this extraordinary conservatory experience.
Yeah, morning to night.
Morning to night.
Yeah.
Loved every minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. You're in heaven. And then you graduate.
And I graduate. That's funny you put it that way. That was difficult to graduate. It was difficult to leave that incubus.
That doesn't sound strange to me.
Perhaps,
I mean.
Yeah. Right. It was...
I mean, really, it's literally like leaving the womb.
It is leaving the womb and leaving the womb without parents.
No, that's exactly right. Right. That's exactly right. Nothing. You're sort of dumped out of the womb.
Right. And one thing about... picking a graduate program that's not so affiliated with a New York base or
right
Los
or Chicago
base,
or Chicago. Any of those places.
So you really are a little left more to your own devices. That's changed. I think my program that I went to has realized that, and other programs realize that they need to transition their actors a little better into the marketplace.
Yeah, that it's not just about training them, but it's about helping them
right.
get work.
They were not unclear about that. We did have classes in the business of being an actor.
That's not the same thing.
Not the same thing. Actually leading one into the next step.
Right, right.
So I did. I moved
or to having some kind of connection that you're feeding, that
right.
somebody's expecting you. Right, right,
right.
Okay, so you leave the hallowed halls and you're standing there with your degree, right? Exactly. and you're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Right? So?
So I lived close to New York. I was born up there and then I was familiar with New York. So I made the move. I made two moves to New York. The first did not go that well. It was hard, and I was living far away from my job waiting tables and was learning the subway system.
Where were you living?
I was living in Long Island City, which was a ghost town at that time.
Yeah.
Now everyone's living in Long Island City. But
or Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. And back then, not many people did. And lonely train rides. Another great thing about this business is the people that I went to school with are the people that continued to help me in my career, and that's what happened. I ended up kind of booking things through people I knew, and that has been the story of my life for the next two decades.
This is, of course, not an unusual story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, for anything.
Yes,
I tell
for
every
anything.
Student who's
right.
in their classmates, and one reason not to bully is
yeah,
the person
never
sitting next to you.
Yes.
Be a CEO someday, absolutely.
Right.
Help you up the chain.
Right, or not.
Or not,
right.
Right.
Okay, so the first go-around in New York, did you get work?
I got work, yeah. Right out the bat. I graced. And then pluses and minuses, you get a false sense of how the business works. So, yeah, I was working quite a bit in my youth, my early days. And then a dry spell came. It got really dark, and I tried to find some... I wasn't looking for other career paths. I just need to pay the rent, as everyone actor does. And I was managing restaurants for quite a while. I started as a waiter, and I was managing. And by the time I was managing a rather famous restaurant called Orso, I was married to that job, and I realized I had completely lost track of my goals there. The money was extraordinary, and but it was...
But the happiness was not.
Yeah, the happiness was not. It was time-consuming.
You'd switch the emphasis from the happiness to the finance.
I find it absolutely extraordinary. And here's my hat off to waiters, and every actor probably has to wait tables, and every waiter here in town. People go into restaurants, and they lose their minds. They feel like they're in an emergency room, and they come screaming up to you and say, my chicken's cold. Hey, I didn't lose your spleen. Well, happy to go back and warm this. There's just this... incredible sense of urgency in restaurants that is...
and sense of entitlement.
Yes. Right. So I knew I didn't want to do that anymore. And I parlayed that into... I was working in hotels, and I'm now a New York tour guide. I have my own company giving tours of New York City, which is great because I get to call upon all the things I learned in school in terms of keeping... 50 people entertained for anywhere from 8 hours to 5 days, and trying to infuse excitement about, it's not too hard, about New York City, but bring people around and engaging them and speaking extemporaneously.
Spontaneous, a little improv here.
A little improv, trying to throw a few jokes in there, keep the act fresh. So I enjoy it. And
also, I could be wrong about this, but you get to choose your hours.
That's
right?
Absolutely right.
Right, you want to work, you don't want to work.
Extraordinary flexible.
Okay, so you heard how Jeff became who he is, how he always was an actor from the beginning. And now I'm going to play the interview I just did with him, in which he talks about becoming all of these characters, how he felt about the play. Both he and I talking at length about what an extraordinary piece of work this is, the writing, and his performance, which is breathtaking. I say in it that watching him was startling, and it definitely was. So here now is Jeff talking about the absolute brightness of Leonard Pelkey. Okay, so I'm here with Jeff Plunkett again. Yes, this is the third time.
Is it?
Yes, this is the third time. The first time was The Column, and then was South Beach.
Oh my gosh,
right?
I forgot about that one.
Yeah. Yes. When I interviewed you the first time, we talked about your early life and how you became what you are, and your tour guide company?
Yes.
Yes, are you still doing that?
Yes, it's huge.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's I really enjoy it, and it's creative, and it's great for a performer, because I was concerned about doing a one-person play, because you're out there alone, but I realize I do that almost every day. I'm speaking like 8 hours a day to strangers, so...
Really? Okay, great.
Dovetailed nicely into this.
Well, yeah, I'm interviewing you now because of the absolute brightness of Leonard Pelkey, which... you are starring in, and I really want to talk at length about the play. But you just want to catch me up? Is there anything you want to say about what happened in the last 4 years?
I was here two other times, I believe.
Oh, yes? Yeah. I couldn't get to interview you for Freud.
Yeah, I was here for Freud's last session, which was wonderful, with George, Tynan Crowley, who I get to see often in New York, which is wonderful, and... and then I was just here in April to do they restaged The Exonerated, which was really...
So, and I didn't realize, you were saying before we started this, that you started here as an intern?
No, I worked here in 1996, so I was a little bit older than the interns, but in that ballpark. And I was living in a yellow house with all the interns upstairs, And fast forward 20 years later, and I'm in that house still. Same place.
The other thing that I listened back to some of what we talked about before, and in South Beach you said, it has finally happened, I'm the oldest person in the cast.
Yes, it happened again.
Did it? It's likely to happen a lot now.
No, it just happened now when I'm the only person in the cast.
That was the question I was going to ask. That's
you are
right.
The oldest, but I'm also the youngest person.
Yes, you are. In the cast. You are the every person in the cast, right? Maybe we should just talk about that. My brother was visiting. My brother's an actor, and he was in from L.A. And he's seen a number of things here. He's even done some work here. And he was stunned by you. And he said, he was talking to somebody who we met, and he said, well, we saw Jeff in Absolute Brightness. He said, and when the play was over, as one, the audience stood.
Oh, wow.
It's a stunning performance. Hey, I've seen you in a number of things, and I know how good an actor you are. But this is something other. This is something... I don't actually know what there is a word for this. Did you? You didn't audition for this. Did you?
We just met to read some of the parts.
Had you read it before?
I had read it, and James Ashford sent me the script, and I read it in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I wrote him right back, and I said, please let me do this for you. And then I wrote with you. because I realized, and as you talk about it, it's so not just me up there. I told the production team I'm swimming in this beautiful production that sets the set and the lights and the projections and the sound and the props. And it's just one of the most lovely productions I've ever been in. And I'm nothing without Kate Alexander. I mean, she is just in every single corner of that production that you saw. And we just worked together through every single moment. And so as much as you're seeing, and let me just pause right here and say, I think everyone is responding to how beautiful this play is. It's such a beautiful play. The writing is exquisite, and it falls into some kind of crevice that I don't think we're accustomed to. And I think everyone's responding to that. It's funny about this grim topic, and I think people leave feeling buoyed and joyful, and I don't think anyone has the slightest inkling of how that's happening to them. And I think it's happening by this beautiful writing that delves into the darkest part of humanity and erupts into joy. It reminds me of Shakespeare's last plays that were not comedies or tragedies. They fell somewhere in between this exquisite kind of truth about what the real human condition is like. Kind of a journey through all of that.
I agree. And it isn't only... It seems to me that you are saying that the writing creates this environment, creates this experience, which is blatantly clear. It's obviously true. But it's also brilliantly written. The words are wonderful, you know?
It's a long poem.
It's a long poem. That's correct. And what's so interesting, well, one of the many things that's so interesting, is that as it's going by and you are swept up in it, even still, those of us who care about language are aware of how extraordinary the language is. You know, I mean, even at the same time, you can take that in on so many levels.
Right.
You know? It starts out, it tricks you.
Oh, it does. I think it takes you on a journey that's unexpected. My friend of mine said, you think you're in an arch comedy at first?
Yes.
And all of a sudden you're in this really deep, truthful, expansive kind of I think you're led to believe it's a half-assed town at the Jersey Shore, so you just expect this dullness, and yet look around you and everybody is a wonderful, colorful lunatic, you know, in a full charming, heartwarming ways. So this play just celebrates that,
and they come through for him,
right
you know?
Yeah.
Difficult, strange, ironic, and uncomfortable, even as he sometimes is.
Right.
They stand up for him.
Right. Absolutely.
See, I have tears in my eyes, even just talking about it.
Yeah. So everyone talks about how they, you know, the one person you never meet is the person everyone's so in love with, and you
right.
feel like you know the best.
That's right.
Isn't that? That's Greek. That's Greek.
It is.
And writing. It's
it
like
is.
The best kind of playwriting.
I believe that so many of us are hiding parts of ourselves, are pretending to be other than we are embarrassed or ashamed of something that we think or do or want, that the emphasis on conformity is so powerful in our culture that most people, unless they're in denial for it, know that there are things about them that doesn't conform to the ideal. So Leonard was so way out on the end of the continuum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so able to be it without denial, without shame, without reservation.
Right.
You know, that speaks to everything that anybody who sees it might be hiding inside themselves.
Yeah.
It's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, because I think it allows to be that carrying shame and repression. It's exhausting, right? And to
yes.
do it for a lifetime is a lifetime of exhaustion. And I think this play just releases that for a moment. Because that relief happens in this play, I think, for everyone who sees it. This is why the playwright is such a genius. The clockmaker says, Leonard could be a lot of work. And then, his surrogate mother says, he was no picnic. No one knows that better than me.
Right.
So, like, you know, those people are not easy to be around. It's like, because they're so, like, up, you know, the dials turn to 11 on those kinds of people.
But they love him anyway.
But they love him anyway, exactly.
That's right.
Right.
And that's the message.
Right.
That we're all lovable.
Precious.
Precious.
Yeah, right? I mean, so precious. Every individual, yeah.
But clearly that's so hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, the writing is amazing. The point of view, the way it takes you from giddy to unhappy to joy, it's brilliant. Yes, yeah. And I cried. I mean, it's not just that you laugh. You know, it touches everything. I mean, the mind and the spirit and the psyche and the emotions, everything. Maybe there are a lot of actors who could have done it. I don't know. But I know that watching you, it was startling. So I'd like you to talk about it. I mean, clearly you knew immediately that you could do it.
Not necessarily. it was, I keep using these words, heartless terror. It was heartless terror. We had to put up a one-person show for graduate school, like 20 minutes. It was the last time I've ever done that, so.
And what did you do in graduate school?
I did extracted some pieces from James Joyce's Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Oh, more language.
Yeah, his little confession chapter.
So that's like a long monologue then.
It was, yeah, and it was easy. This, I just, when I read this, so the challenge was, well, I don't memorize things as well as I used to, and people often, you know, the actor's joke is when people come backstage and say, how did you memorize all those lines? Which is like the least part of what a rehearsal process is. But it's big when you're out
But
there
in this one...
It is, yeah. And I just know that I go up more than I used to. I used to like look at something and know it, and I can't. So I literally had to be on a treadmill for a month because I have to tie memorizing lines into something physical now.
Yes.
So...
This is before she... staged it
before I got here.
Oh
yeah.
So Kate Alexander is the go-to person.
Yes, if you have to do a one-person performance, because she's been in several and she's directed many, and she's such a great anchor. And she said, "Please come in knowing this 80%." And I took her at her word, which was the greatest advice ever. And And then she just leads you through what she calls a racetrack, which is a great metaphor. She's like, you have to reach these certain hurdles at these certain points.
Are these emotional hurdles?
And physical and timing and everything. She just kind of works this.
So she'd worked it out. She'd worked out the racetrack before?
Well, she knew we had to do it. And she had a, yeah, she had a great overview of what it was going to look like. And then we kind of hashed through that together, what it needed to be. But that's her concept. And I like fell into it 100%, as have other actors who've worked with her, who I've spoken about this prospect with, because it is terrifying. It's not terrifying like being a police officer terrifying or going to war terrifying, but to know that if anything goes wrong, you have to dig yourself out of it somehow.
Yeah,
is
true.
I don't know why. You know, public speaking is the number one fear among people, and so to be out there alone is really, it's hard to prepare for, and Kate is the best person to prepare you for it.
Well, and I know that the message of this play, which it seems to me has to do with respect for the individual, appreciation, the absence of judgment, the ability to be yourself in the face of a community that you are different from.
Right.
The ability of some people to stand for themselves in the face of criticism or challenge, and the ability of some to support that, to see it, to see the beauty of standing for yourself, and the other side, people who can't do that, or are challenged by it, or afraid of it, or I believe that this is a message that's very close to Kate's heart.
Right.
So this is a play that she would want to be as good as it can be to do and, you know, to offer, right?
Right.
So in that way, she's also the very best person to have done this particular play,
yeah.
You know?
She's the best person to do any play.
Yes, I think that's right, too.
She, and I just told her this recently, she just takes every opportunity, every play she gets her hands on. I told her, I wrote her this, I said, you turn it into a church. We just build this beautiful sanctuary of language and emotional honesty and authenticity. And this play just explodes in her world.
Yes.
I think you're absolutely right. I think something about this play that's a little bit of a miracle is we're graced with these miracle people every once in a while, right? Like Mozart and Shakespeare and someone like Leonard, who is so
himself
gifted with a sense of self that they just shine. And 99% of the people are attracted to that, and 1% of the people are threatened by it. And maybe more. I'd like to adjust those percentages. But I think even like the people that are threatened by it are threatened by it because it is so attractive, you know?
Yeah, because they're drawn to it and it scares them.
Right.
In every predator, there's a victim.
Right.
Right? And I believe that, absolutely. And you can see it a little bit in the play. He doesn't vilify the person who does this as much as he might have.
No, he rather dismisses him, frankly, and doesn't get into the why. But I have to tell you that dark spot, that dark person in the play, was the most challenging to me. It was the last thing I memorized. I had a hard time memorizing it. It was the place I felt uncomfortable going to. I also felt a need to try and get in his head, which was like not a nice place to go to. I felt it was important to try and make him a human. And James put these wonderful little flashes of yelling at his father, and his mother's dead, and he's a young man, and 16, 17. So you get these hints of like...
No, he humanizes him.
He does, and you're like, so he could be a sociopath, clear some level of sociopathy going on there, but, you know, he's still a human being, and that was the hardest human being to get out of the nine of them.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, your focus must be iron Because if you lose focus for a second, I can imagine you can't remember who the hell you are. Do you know what I mean?
So this is a great exercise about being present, because you should always be present, right, in every moment. So doing a one-person show just kind of ups your game. Susan Greenhill, who acts here quite regularly because she's wonderful, giving me these great pep talks when we were doing the Exonerated here, and she said, you'll use parts of your brain that you didn't know you had. And I have to admit, that is, out of all of the joys of this and the challenges, that's been the really most precious. I really feel like I'm firing on all these pistons
yes.
that I hadn't been for years. And quite literally, using parts of my brain I hadn't used ever, maybe.
So I'd like to talk about the individual characters.
Sure.
I understand perfectly that the villain of the piece is the most difficult for
yeah.
you to find.
An acting teacher once said, someone has to play Stalin, you know. Someone has to, like, get in that horrible head and realize why he was doing what he was doing, so.
Yeah. Okay, so who did you like the best?
I pick a day, and it was always different.
Really?
The one I was most concerned about was the guy who brings you, like, the storyteller. The guy who brings you on this journey is the
detective.
Yeah, I just felt furthest away from him, oddly. This play clearly takes place south of Atlantic City. A lot of my childhood was on the Jersey Shore, so I knew these people. I could see them. The similarities are just remarkable. So that was fun. And I would go, we would go through rehearsals, and some days I would just be in love with Phoebe, the girl.
Phoebe is the daughter.
Daughter, because she just,
You're becoming her as we speak. I can watch it.
Well, she solves the crime, you know, mm-hmm. she solves the crime.
Inadvertently,
yeah. And she goes through this horrible horror of having fallen for
a terrible person.
So
yeah, and that's the scariest.
Amazing.
That's that's the scariest moment in the play.
I think
of course.
So. She
right.
goes through almost like a murder or assault or horrifying. And I just loved her many, many days, and I still do.
So she was easy.
She was easy. I don't know if the audience loves her as much as I do, but the mob wife, I think, is just hilarious. And she goes through this crisis of conscience in the play. Like, she's an onlooker to God knows what, the mob. And she just wonders where she's going, and she ends up trying to help, and she ends up trying to solve the crime.
Yeah.
She calls him back, and she, you know, gives him a lesson on rope tying, and of course she knows about knots. It's hilarious. I just love her. She's dingbat, goofy. And so some days I was just totally head over heels for her, and then the clock guy is just racked with guilt and charm. I don't know. So just any given day, I'd be like, I'm all over this guy today or this gal today. And first monologue that I read for Richard in New York was the woman at the morgue. You know, that piece is a play in and of itself. That's such an incredible journey. This tough broad. And I'm just visioning, I had an aunt. I was so this person. She was kind of big. It was like in the 70s, so she had like big plastic ear, like what, like sweet jewelry sweets, but they were like kind of big and bold, and she always had like lipstick smeared on her lips, and she smoked like a maniac, and her name is Rita. Come to Rita. So I'm like, that's totally this woman. So anyway, I love her every night, and I don't know. I love all of these people. And that's just this playwright who I had the great, great honor to meet right before I knew I was doing this. He had written a play. It was the first play he'd ever written that he was not in. And he was so charming. He just did the play. We were talking to him, and he just said, this is so hard to watch something and not be in it. And I just thought that was so charming. And he's incredibly gifted. He was written for Will and Grace, and won an Academy Award, and star of New York. I'm sure anyone who he started the Trevor Project for at-risk youth suicide prevention. Just say too, I'm so excited. We have also youth coming tonight.
Oh yes.
Who are performing? Someone donated 15 tickets. So we're going to talk afterwards, and I'm like jumping off the ceiling. I'm so excited about that.
Right.
So these are the kids who I just want to like wrap my arms around and say, thanks for coming. And letters here for you. Our set has become like a shrine. So people are sending these tokens and letters.
Are you serious?
And we're putting everything on the set. Things stuffed in their drawers and things in the files and letters and gifts. And so it's really like special.
Yeah. I think theater is supposed to have an impact. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, but there's two other very similar kind of programs next week. Forest Studio Theater really does work hard to engage the community on that level, and I'm so proud to be a part of that. And other plays, we've done that. Race, we did that here.
Yes.
And I think that kicked off their kind of forum series here, which has mm-hmm. become really, like, integral to the community. And I'm like you, Lynn. I'll be perfectly honest with you. A lot of theater doesn't float my boat, and I don't really feel like some projects will come my way. Everything I've done here has been like this extraordinary gift. So, like, I'm going back to a play about racism called Permanent Collection, about the Barnes Collection, and race, and this play about a string ensemble called Opus, which gets done occasionally, but it's a beautiful play. And just to have done Freud's Last Session. And
I love that play.
It's a beautiful play. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And then to do The Exonerated, where we went to jail. They brought us to the Sarasota County. Met with some inmates, and then we met with the Innocence Project people and our incredible public defender in town, Larry Yeager. And so, yeah, everything here has just been like, it pops on many levels, and it this is everything I ever wanted to do as an actor. And my sister just wrote me the loveliest email. She said, I always kind of knew you were going to have your big break, and I'm crafting a response to that. And I'm like, I never like wanted a big break. I just wanted to do like plays like this that float my boat. And so here I am in the biggest like boat I've ever been in.
Yes. Like, I have tears again.
It's such a great boat to be in. My gosh, it's like this is my dream come true.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know how I'll ever do anything after this, frankly. Because it is just, I wrote my mom too. I just feel like every lesson you drove me to and every moment in graduate school and every table I waited on and every tourist I dragged around by the nose in New York City, it's like everything was leading to this moment. This feels like such, some kind of acme, you know, it's just so thrilling.
I know how much it matters to you to do work that matters to you.
I want to share what matters to me with people, and I'm so grateful when they're receptive to that. And that's the gift of the community of the live performance, right? It's such a cliche, but like I feel it, and particularly when you're engaging the audience in a one-person show, just feel everyone kind of reacting as one. And I just think, too, a live audience makes us work harder. If you're not honest, they let you know.
Right.
Feel it, you know?
That's right.
Like you feel them turning off, or so the pressure of this mass of people's eyes on you compels you to be honest. You can feel them slipping away, and you realize, I'm not really present, right? It's not their fault. I love when actors say, like, oh, it's a horrible audience, and I'll do it, too. It's not, though, you know? Everyone's out. They paid money, and they want to, you know,
They want truth. That's exactly right.
Yeah, they want to laugh, or they want to not laugh. They're here
rooting for
you.
They want to care.
They come rooting for you.
That's
you
right.
Know?
Okay, so I asked you this question before, but I'm going to ask it again, because maybe it's different now. So having lived a life dedicated to this work, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know how much of my life I've dedicated to this. I never had like a big arc picture for my life as I look back. It's been more like a day-to-day struggle. Like, how am I going to get through today? And trying to sock some money away for the month. And so, I don't know. The short answer is, I don't know if I ever like dedicated my life to art. I've just been really fortunate to play when I do. I'm really lucky for this place, like this theater where we're sitting in. It's just like been so generous to me and given me my like most spectacular opportunities. So thank you, Florida Studio Theater.
So there's no plan.
Yeah, I'm not a good planner. I finally have an IRA.
I'm glad to hear.
I finally opened up an IRA.
I'm really glad to hear.
Only to keep the taxes down.
So are you saying that you're kind of the quintessential one day at a time guy?
Yeah, I really am.
Mm-hmm.
On every level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working for you.
It does.
I guess I want to ask, is there anything about being an actor that's really important to you?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about myself in the roles I played. And I think I learned a lot about people I didn't know about in the roles I played and the roles I've been on stage with. I think like even the act of prayer, right, is just extending oneself out of oneself, right? I want to know you. I'm reaching out to you. So even on your own, you can do that, right? But in the theater, you're extending yourself in this world of this play, and then you feel that it's so palpable, as cliche as it might sound, you just feel that presence of everyone in the room with you. You feel the connection, you feel this, most fundamental thing we're called to do is to step in shoes and see what their perspective is like. So understanding, like an incredible level of understanding comes out of being an actor.
That's a great place to stop.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
Jeff. Thank you, and it's so great to talk to you again.
Jeff says that one of the most important things that we are called to do is to truly understand another person, another person's perspective, how another person feels. And that's a gift that actors get, that they get to immerse themselves in another person, to see what it feels like to be another person. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. When Jeff talks about his work, about how he feels about what he's doing, you hear his commitment to being the person he really is. You can hear that he's speaking the truth, that he's speaking from the deepest part of himself, and that having an opportunity to learn what it's like to be another person is part of the gift of being an actor. I think it's part of the gift of really being yourself. When you are yourself truly, then you can risk stepping into someone else's shoes, experiencing what it feels like to be another person. And of course, in the absolute brightness, Jeff gets an opportunity to step into 9 shoes and to be, to become, to inhabit their world, to inhabit what motivates them, moves them, scares them. This is a gift, as he says, of being an actor. And because he thinks that's a gift, you know he's doing what he was meant to do. The gift to us as audience is that we get to see what it looks like to be another person. We get to see it because he does it completely. He becomes them. He is them. He's in love with them. And so that's the amazing gift that good acting can give to an audience. And as I have said several times in this show, that's a gift from the absolute brightness of Leonard Pelkey. And it is my hope that you will not cheat yourself out of this gift, that you will go right out if you haven't already seen it and make sure that you benefit from Jeff's ability to step into other characters and from the playwright's ability to write these characters in a way that is so moving to us and tell a story that captures us. Well, you know, The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. And as I say in the show, it is my belief that all of us are in some way or another not the person that that the conventional wisdom says we should be. And so for so many people, they're not actually being the person they really are. And of course it is the Lynn Show's mission to say, if for some reason you have not been able to be the person you really are, the whole person you really are, it's not too late to recover something you may have had to leave behind. And if you want to talk to me about that, please go up on my website, thelynnshow.com. That's THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. There's an email tab. You can click on it and ask me any question that you would like. I'll be happy to hear from you and to answer you. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization. You can listen to all of my shows, including this one again. And as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something that inspired you, something that's going to motivate you to come down to FST and see the absolute brightness. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. Chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't all. Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten